Biden pardoning marijuana possession convictions, IOSHA failures during the pandemic, plus a Secretary of State debate, and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending October 14th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Indiana Democrats are calling on Governor Eric Holcomb to follow the lead of President Joe Biden and pardon anyone convicted in Indiana of simple marijuana possession. The Biden administration recently announced it would pardon anyone convicted at the federal level of marijuana possession, and it directed federal agencies to review whether marijuana should still be classified as a Schedule I drug. The Indiana Black Legislative Caucus hailed Biden's moves as just and humane. In a statement, IBLC Chair Robin Shackelford noted that black Hoosiers are arrested nearly four times as often for marijuana possession as white Hoosiers. The caucus also continues to call for cannabis to be decriminalized in Indiana. Indiana is one of only 13 states that has not legalized the drug either for medicinal or full recreational use. Should Governor Holcomb pardon simple marijuana possession convictions? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Allie Bartlett. John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Allie, should the governor follow the president's lead?
Well, first and foremost, I want to say that I don't really think this is an issue on the fundamental issue is not whether we agree or disagree on whether or not people should be incarcerated for a simple marijuana possession. I think that what President Biden is doing by now putting this back on governors is reminiscent of the fact that what he did didn't really do very much. And so now governors are faced with this question. I think that Governor Holcomb has taken the right approach in saying that this is something that has to be covered by the legislature either at the congressional level or at the state legislative level. This is not an executive determination.
Yeah, and the statement I got from the governor's office was that he can't consider blanket pardons for this offense until federal law changes, that the president is trying to go around Congress instead of working with them. And the governor also pointed out that Indiana's expungement law, which allows for the expungement of low-level nonviolent offenses, shields these records from employers. And so we sort of have a system in place already that can help these people not, in the governor's words, have a life sentence for a crime like this.
Well, that's fine if they stay in Indiana. If they don't stay in Indiana, the expungement law may not be the same where they try to find a job. And, you know, frankly, this is typical Eric Holcomb. I don't want to make a decision. I think the best thing about what the president did on this is not open the jails, since there were, I don't know if there were any people incarcerated in the federal system for simple marijuana possession, but it does take care of the records of thousands of young people across the country that would be prejudiced in finding good employment after the fact. And what it also does is it brings this topic in front of Congress. When we talked about this issue a couple of weeks ago, we, I think, agreed that what had to happen is federal action by Congress. But we can't get the Republicans in Congress to take action on this. But this does bring that issue to the forefront. It makes people start saying, well, okay, this is one step, but we really need to deal with the fundamental problem, which requires Congress to actually function and take it off the list of the controlled substances. It is not like cocaine. It shouldn't be on the same schedule as cocaine, and the risks are not the same. And we could get action by the federal government, which would take care of all of these things, but Republicans won't act.
When we had the conversation about cannabis at the state legislative level, we had the study committee recently, we talked about what's going to be the catalyst for the state to finally make a move on this. And Ann just pointed out, and the governor has pointed out, he's waiting for the feds to do something. The feds have done something here, though not rescheduling the drug or anything like that. But does something like this push the legislature a little closer to making changes than necessarily waiting for Congress to act?
I don't think so. Not the current climate with the Republican supermajorities. There's just not enough Republicans on board yet while it's still a federal crime. I mean, and I get their point. I mean, what kind of, you know, I guess, example are you setting if you decide we're not going to follow this federal law, but we are going to follow this federal law? You know, I mean, it's a fair discussion to have. Now, I will say this about our expungement law. Tons of people are using it. This is the perfect example to use it for. I mean, it's you don't even really need a lawyer because you just have to fill out a form. And
if you stay in Indiana.
No, you can still do it from another state. You just have to file in the county where your conviction comes from.
Well, that may be. But then the question is, what are the rules as far as the other state? What are you required to say in your application and all? You know, it.
Yeah, because Indiana's expungement only applies to Indiana employers, theoretically.
Right.
Well, right.
But
John, if for the president, you know, pardoning all these crimes, for the governor who's saying, well, one, we have the expungement process, but two, I'm not blanketly pardoning anything before the feds act. Are there any downsides to either of those actions for either of those people?
Probably not, for any number of reasons that have been discussed here. The political makeup of not only the General Assembly, but Hoosiers' sentiments on these sorts of things. You know, this was for some a real front burner issue. It wasn't that long ago. Was it last year before the session that the Indiana Democratic Party came out with making cannabis reform its number one priority, maybe number two and three priority as well? And
which
I think
came
there was
as a surprise, if I remember correctly, to some members of the Indiana legislature.
It probably did, and it just because it did come out of the state committee, correct, and the party leadership. But I think we don't. It may still be their top priority, but we don't hear about it. And I think because other issues have come into play. We're dealing with inflation. We're dealing with gas prices. We're dealing with mortgage rates. We're dealing with abortion. We're dealing with immigration. It's just not the potent issue that it was. So I don't think there is that catalyst yet. As far as what the president, it's probably tough for a governor, any governor, to say the president could have done more, because I think Joe Biden would love to do more on a lot of these issues, but he's already, you know, look at the pushback on student loans. He can pardon for federal crimes. He's not really in a position to extend those pardons for state crimes. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. And I can only imagine the uproar if in fact he had tried, and people saying, what happened to the 10th Amendment? This is a state, you know,
also
you're trampling on states' rights.
Also point out, that while Governor Holcomb doesn't maybe want to do a blanket pardon, anyone can seek a pardon as well for this now under existing law.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, should Governor Eric Holcomb pardon anyone convicted of simple marijuana possession? A, yes, or B, no. Last week, we asked you who you think will win Indiana's Secretary of State race. 17% say Republican Diego Morales, 78% say Democrat Destiny Wells, and 5% say Libertarian Jeff Moore. I don't know who's going to win. That won't be the margin, no matter the results. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. An in-depth investigation first published this week by the Indianapolis Star shows what the report calls a pattern of inaction and repeated failures by the Indiana Occupational Safety and Health Administration, IOSHA, to protect workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. COVID-19 saw an explosion of complaints directed to the Workplace Protection Agency, more than 6,000 since 2020, the Star report says, and IOSHA conducted inspections on less than 1%, the worst rate in the nation. The Star highlighted the Tyson meatpacking plant in Logansport, which received more complaints than any other Tyson facility in the country. At least 4 workers died, and the Star reports IOSHA never sent inspectors. Other details from the Star's investigation? When inspections were done, they were often remote. Some of the highest numbers of complaints came from RV and vehicle manufacturers in Elkhart County, and none were inspected. The number of inspectors at IOSHA is down 50% since the agency launched in 1986, while the working population in Indiana has increased 30% over that time, and state funding for the agency has been stagnant for a decade. Ann Delaney, quite frankly, is there any reason to think anything will change?
No, not as long as Republicans control state government. I mean, their whole raison d'etre is to cut regulations and cut taxes, and nothing else matters. If workers die, well, you know, workers die. We give them workers' comp, piddling little workers' comp, but we give them workers' comp. I mean, it's the same approach they take to everything. We don't have enough teachers or special education teachers. What's the response? Lower the requirements. You know, we think we don't have enough college graduates. Do we increase funding for our universities? Oh, no. We increase the amount the universities have to rely on tuition support in order to make ends meet. It goes on and on. Our voter turnout, what, we're 49th or 50th? What do? We put more restrictions in place. I mean, the only time they want restrictions are on voting and on a woman's body. Other than that, all they want is to be left alone. So it's not going to change. They're satisfied with Indiana being the Mississippi of the Midwest on all of these issues, higher education, K-12 education, health, where we're 49th or 50th, voter turnout, where we're 49th or 50th, in Iosha, where we're dead last. This is what they want. This is the environment they want, and the only reason, the only platform they have are cut regulations, cut taxes.
There's some pretty stark numbers in this story, pretty stark stories in this report. Does it need a response from the General Assembly?
I believe that the General Assembly will take this to heart and will try to move the needle on this in the upcoming legislative session. But again, Iosha can only do what it can do when they're following direction from the CDC and the federal government as well. I mean, they're doing the best with what they have, and I don't agree with the point about this is what the General Assembly does on all of the major issues, especially teacher funding and education, when the General Assembly has spent record number of dollars in public education
in
the
last
3 years. It is.
Every budget, when it's $1 more, you
keep
saying it's
record. And what can we do with throwing more dollars and more dollars? It has to be fundamental policy change.
Well, you could have the staff, for example, where 50% of the staff
were instituted under Democrats
originally. 50% of the staff under
the Democrats are the ones who started this, and now Republicans are the ones who are going to have to clean it up.
In 1986,
by the way,
you were in control. And throwing more dollars at
everything else, just like everything else, throwing dollars at it is not always the solution.
Maybe it would be enough to have people who can do the investigations. They didn't even
send
somebody out to
investigate. Right, so do I think that they're going to take a look at how that's operated? Absolutely. Do I think that there need to be fundamental policy changes versus throwing more dollars at everything? Absolutely.
John, there's been a real, and we've talked about this, I think, maybe even just last week or a couple weeks ago. There's been significant pushback recently in the General Assembly over state regulation. And part of that is driven, it seems, by a perception that the state and state agencies aren't responsive to either private citizens or, importantly, the General Assembly when they're asking questions about, well, why are you doing this or why are you doing that? Given that climate, I'll ask you the same question I asked Anne, is anything likely to change?
Not given the makeup of the General Assembly. Let's face it, many of the members of the General Assembly probably would see a low inspection rate as being a plus if you're trying to lure businesses and manufacturers from other parts of the country. How often do we hear the mantra, you know, we are not going to be tied up in red tape. You can operate your business and do what you do best. We'll stay out of your way, more or less. And so there are some that would say that's probably okay. Now, as long as nobody wants to see anybody die or harmed, but short of that, it reminds me in many ways it's a state version of the IRS debate at the federal level where the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, earmarked $80 billion for 87,000 apparently much needed IRS employees, because right now you can do about anything you want on your taxes, I guess.
Ask Donald Trump.
And, well, he did get audited, or, well, maybe he did. But most people are not getting audited because there's just no enforcement is not there. That's one way to reap more benefit in terms of federal coffers, tax coffers. But what has the House caucus said at the federal level? Number one priority, if they regain control of the House, is doing away with that. And so the notion of an emasculated regulatory agency does have an appeal to some people. Last point. Iosha can make a difference. Now, this was at a healthier stage in its history, but back in the late 80s or 90s, Indiana had a huge problem with trenching collapses, a lot of construction sites, and people were dying because people weren't putting the proper trench boxes and so forth in. And Don Morrow, who was brought in, had been a colonel, turned into a Bob Ward troubleshooter, a Republican, appointed by the Democratic administration to clean it up, and they essentially went after a lot of this regulatory scheme and actually did away with those types of fatalities. At least, I don't think there was another one in the next 24 months.
Of course, we had a Democratic governor.
Let's not get into that. But
Let me ask you this, which is the governor has been talking about, and we'll find out what the numbers are eventually, but he's been talking about a need to really increase employee pay across state government because it's really low. You're having trouble retaining people. You're having trouble recruiting people to do the important jobs that government does. This could arguably be part of that, paying them better or getting more of them. But Is he going, is something like this help him, or does it really not make a difference, this report?
I mean, I do think the numbers, at least on the staffing, should be an easy thing for them to look at. Like, I mean, if you're getting X number of complaints and you can't actually, you don't have enough people to look into them, that's a fair discussion to have. The thing that was more troubling to me about this story than anything was the idea that they didn't send anyone. Like, remote inspections? I don't even understand what that means.
Well, I mean, theoretically, the company is only showing you what it wants to show you.
And so basically, in the end, if it was he said between the company and the complainant, it appears they just took the company's word every time. And that maybe that was partly due to staffing, but I also think it was probably, ironically, partly due to concerns about health welfare of sending someone into those situations.
And my thing with that is, that's not a legislative issue. That's not something that the legislature is now, that's the way the agency is being run. That's
that
not something
is.
That you change
right.
regulations
right.
in the legislature at. That's just how are we doing our jobs even within the bounds of the current law.
Although as soon as agencies, and we can cite a lot of examples, ABC and others, have tried to do certain things in certain ways, that is perceived as running afoul of the legislature's prerogative, then they'll come back and bigfoot the agencies.
All right. Well, this week's debate between two of Indiana's candidates for Secretary of State highlighted that Democrat Destiny Wells and Libertarian Jeff Moore agree on a lot, but there's also a sharp divide between the two over the safety and security of Indiana's elections. Moore repeatedly advocated for post-election audits in all 92 counties. Indiana currently does them in 10. He says such audits will help dispel things like the so-called big lie that the 2020 election was rigged.
A top-to-bottom audit of everything that we do. Every ballot that comes in, every door that gets locked, every person that sees or touches the election process in one way or another.
Moore calls such audits preventative maintenance for election systems. But Destiny Wells says forcing county clerks to conduct expensive audits with no evidence that they're necessary helps perpetuate lies about the election system. The system, she says, isn't the problem.
We have people who are acting irresponsibly, who are power hungry, and who can't accept results because they don't want to give up power. We have to face that head on and again, fight it with good information and evidence.
There wasn't much discussion of what Moore called the 800-pound gorilla not in the room, Republican candidate Diego Morales, who refused to participate in the debate. Nikki Kelly, are you surprised Diego didn't come up more? Maybe not in the questions, but even in the responses, he wasn't mentioned that often.
Yeah, I was a little bit. I thought it would be a little more pointed at the elephant in the room than it was.
Not in the room.
Exactly. Literally. I was a little surprised. On the other hand, you risk sort of that fine line of beating up on a guy who's not there, though he's not there at his own behest. So,
yeah. This wasn't what he didn't have a conflict as far as we know. He just never responded to multiple attempts to contact his campaign.
Whatever happened to common courtesy? At least just send an email and say I decline.
John, I asked this question and they just opted not to do it to maybe seem like they were taking a position. But an empty podium, highlighting the fact, and they mentioned it a couple times. The moderator started at the beginning and said that he was invited but did not respond. She mentioned it again in the middle of the debate. Do you put an empty podium up there to emphasize the point that, hey, there's someone who's not participating in these sorts of things?
I think that's people know the rules of engagement. The Debate Commission and others have been around and have been set up to create opportunities for Hoosiers to hear directly from the people seeking their votes. It's not as if this is some wildcat operation that just sprung up, some unknown group or some small media outlet in a corner of the state and said, hey, well, let's have us a debate. This isn't that. Everybody knew the rules of engagement. To the extent that you should be spanked, figuratively, for not showing up, I'm all for it. I think that's a worthwhile reminder that people have shirked perhaps their responsibility as a candidate.
Diego's strategy in the general election has been don't respond to many media requests for interviews. Don't show up at sort of more general public events. There's been another debate that was put on by a bar association, I think, that he didn't show up to. Joint events between the other candidates he hasn't shown up to. He seems, at least based on his social media feeds, to show up to Republican events, speaking to the base, which obviously you would assume is going to vote for him anyway. Is that going to help him? I mean, even in a race that's not paid attention to, like the Secretary of State's race, is only speaking to your base the best strategy here?
So I think this is a question that is unique to Indiana, though, because in Indiana, where Republicans are dominant in nearly every office, speaking to his base might be to his advantage. Do I think it would be different if we were asking this question about Destiny Wells? Yes, absolutely, because she knows very well that she does need Republican votes to win. Do I think that it's different for Jeff Maurer? Absolutely. With Diego, he may be safe speaking only to his base. If he gets enough Republicans out to vote for him, he may be safe anyways. So,
if Diego Morales wins this election, does that send a message to other candidates in the future that why would I participate in a debate?
Or why would I grope people? Or why would I lie about my veteran status? Or why would I get fired from the job that I'm applying for? I mean, if he wins this election, shame on the Republican Party for allowing him to be nominated. I mean, he didn't show up. It's not about having a base big enough to get him elected. He can't answer those questions. He can't go and have an unfriendly question addressed to him about, did you do this? Did you do that? And on and on and on. I mean, he wants to restrict voting. He's an election denier. I mean, there are so many reasons he's just not suitable for Secretary of State's office, and shame on the Republican Party for nominating him.
The mayor of Indiana's second largest city pleaded guilty this week to one misdemeanor count of operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. The plea agreement at Fort Wayne Mayor Tom Henry's initial hearing in Allen Superior Court came about 24 hours after he admitted to getting behind the wheel after drinking at a public event. After a minor crash late Saturday night with no reported injuries, Henry was booked into the Allen County Jail on two counts, one of which indicated his blood alcohol concentration was nearly twice the legal limit. Sunday afternoon, Henry read a prepared statement to the press.
I am terribly embarrassed by the poor decision-making that occurred last evening. And today I am here for a single purpose, and that is to express my heartfelt and sincere apology to all the citizens of our city.
Henry, a Democrat, is up for re-election next year. John Schwanes, already a four-term mayor, which I think is a record for Democrats in Fort Wayne. Does Henry need to bow out of his re-election bid?
You know, it's not for me to say. I think this is an issue for voters, for Tom Henry, the mayor, and for the people who put him in office. They know better what they expect from the chief executive of their city, what their expectations are, and how they react to his apology. He had an event, met with, he didn't answer questions necessarily, but he did address the cameras very quickly after the incident and issued an apology. And again, how sincere and whether that is seen as sufficient punishment, I don't know. The council now is looking at some additional issues such as, you know, who pays for the damage since it was a public vehicle. Once he gets past the suspension period, will he be allowed to drive a city-owned vehicle again, or what other means is there? Would someone have to drive in? And if so, who is that individual and who pays that person's salary? So, I mean, it's going to dog him for a while. But again, it's up to him and up to his constituents.
And that's part of it. This is not like he came out and did a full mea culpa, didn't try to make any excuses. It was, I did something wrong. I am very
sorry.
And
I had not seen that before. To be pleading guilty within 48 hours after it happened, I mean, someone gave him some good advice, which is, you know, let's not make this a story for four or five days or
but
weeks.
But it is going to get dragged out a little by some of these other
a
issues.
A little It'll by come those minor things.
This is not Gary. Republicans could absolutely, might have already. I mean, when somebody's been in office for that long, there's always questions about can they hold on for another term.
Right.
Does he need to, for his party, where Democrats can take all the, can need all the wins they can get, does he need to say, maybe it's best to step aside and let somebody else step up?
I don't think so. I think he generally expressed remorse. Who among us has not made a mistake at some point in our careers? And at least he had the gumption to own up to it and do something about it. And, you know, anybody who's been in Fort Wayne over the course of his tenure have realized what a great job he's done for that city. It's really catapulted itself into a wonderful place to live, and that's in large part due to his stewardship. So I think people are going to look at that in the context of him knowing he made a mistake, and you know, in terms of driving, who knows? Most mayors in the larger cities in the state have police officers driving around.
I was surprised he didn't have one.
Yeah.
Republicans were already looking at this as maybe we might be able to pick this seat up. How much more attention will be paid in next year's elections to winning back this seat?
I actually don't think much more attention will be paid just because of this incident. I do think that the mayor did himself a favor by coming out and owning up to this straight up. And I will say that we've seen Republican members of the council also come out and say, hey, this mayor has worked well across the aisle. He's done good things for the city. We generally accept his remorseful apology. So just given those circumstances and the way that this mayor in particular has been able to kind of bridge that gap across the aisle, I don't think any more particular attention will be paid because of this incident. Do I think that there is an opportunity for Republicans regardless? Yes. Do I think that more focus will be put on this race because of that? Probably not.
All right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Allie Bartlett, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS video app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.